compulsion to not allow Alec McDonald to speak. Then there was another gimmicky thing, and they were not going to pay the expense accounts of anybody that didn't support the Teamsters. You know, we were going to be outcasts. So there were going to be 14 of us. And that made me mad. You know, because it was a lousy little expense account for your hotel room and I think $10 a day for meals. And they were going to scare people off because of that. If they didn't become Teamsters, they wouldn't have this paid. And actually, the two women from Creston were desperate enough to have to sign it. I felt that there's no way that we are going to be intimidated. So when that motion passed, then 14 of us walked out. And then we went to room 222. And Alec McDonald insisted that we carry on the convention. And I really didn't know what was happening at that point. But somebody had the bright idea that the room might be bugged, and we examined all behind the curtains and all the rest of it. We wouldn't have known a bug if we'd found one. And we carried on with the convention. And then there was a motion at that meeting that this constituted the continuation of the proper convention of the Fruit and Vegetable Workers Union, etc., etc. So we were legal. We didn't really know, Sarah, what was happening to us. We were sort of pawns.
Yeah.
On the power struggle between the IWA, the carpenters, the railroad workers, none of whom wanted the Teamsters in here. The UPWA, you know, they all had a vested interest in keeping the Teamsters out. So anyway, as a result of that, I agreed that I would be a very reluctant witness if and when we had a court case. And that's how I came to be the chief plaintiff, because I didn't know what was happening until I got the letter from the other side about the examination for discovery, and whereas, Ms. Falls, you have agreed, you know, to do so and so and so, and therefore will you please present yourself at such and such time. And then I got excited. And then I phoned Alec McDonald, and I yelled a little bit. And I didn't even know what a plaintiff was. I didn't know the difference between a plaintiff and a defendant. So your book can't be very flattering to us.
Well,
never thought about before. You know, who would have thought that you and I would go out on strike, and, you know, it's sort of like going naked in public. You know, you're exposing yourself. It's only a small town, but it's still, there's a before and after. You know, you can never go back again after you've once showed up on a picket line and made an issue and put your name in the paper and written letters to the editor. You're marked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard Professor, at one of the first labor schools that I was at in Parksville, Professor Noel Hall made a remark about this. You know, it's very easy to be anonymous in the city. It's not that easy to be anonymous in your hometown, where there are only so many people, and you belong to certain organizations, and you play bridge. Well, I didn't play bridge, but I was active in a lot of other things. it's not that easy to be anonymous, you know, forever after. You know, you're known for your stand one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. I bet people still react to you from that strike.
I imagine so, yes. Yeah. You know, either pro or con.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't need a placard.
Yeah.
When I'm introduced to somebody, I can tell whether they're pro-trade union or whether they're not, you know. This kind of thing, yeah.
Are the packing houses still organized in this area?
It has greatly changed. There used to be 28 packing houses. I don't know how many there are now. The Oliver Co-op has swallowed up the Southern. It swallowed up Mac and Fitz.
And
Haynes. And
over at Carameas.
And Carameas and Caledon. So, you know, it's...
they're all in one big...
I think the other thing that has happened, they have not so much become automized. No, is that the right word? As mechanized.
Mechanized.
Yes, yeah. And they have more professional people now running the packing house. You know, it used to be, if you were the box boy when you were 15, by the time you got to be 65, you might end up as manager. You know? They now have more professional managers. The whole thing is much more business-oriented. There's no longer the silliness that we went through when we could ask management to use the bulletin board for our own purposes to make give our own messages.
You didn't hear how that turned out with the Haynes about the seniority, eh? I hear they went to labor relations board and all over, because they want, the seniority they had there, they wanted to apply to the co-op. So
yeah.
I haven't heard.
No, I haven't heard either. I had a phone call from Brian Armstrong, but I haven't heard since. I have a date with him one of these days. No, the whole situation has changed a great deal.
Yeah.
I really think packing houses are much more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more conscious of their labor relations. They're much more conscious. At one time, they had such a lot of leeway. You could work at the packing house for 60 days before you got on the seniority list, you know, and they had all that time to judge you, so which meant that you could work a couple of years in the packing house. You know, now we have a much shorter period. I once said to them, how do you judge a new worker? And, you know, this was, we used to have quarterly meetings. And we were arguing that they didn't need 60 days to judge a worker. You know, if they were management, they should be smart enough to size up that worker within 30 days. They didn't need to keep them dangling for 60 days. You know, it was to their advantage to keep them dangling for 60 days, you know, and it could go on for several seasons. I know a lot of other outfits do this. Super Value does this, you know. You have to have X number of hours before you get on the list, and so what they do is cut down the number of hours, and you can work there 5 years, and you're still not really on the seniority list. So we were arguing this whole point. You don't need 60 days before people get on the seniority list. How do you judge them? Do you touch them and see, like the American Army did? If they're warm and they're alive and they blink.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, there was a lot of giggling, but we finally made the point that if management is smart, they don't need 60 days to judge a worker. They can figure out who's a good worker and who isn't. Well, their argument was, on the other hand, some people can pull off fast one, you know, and be a good worker for 30 days and then immediately, well, okay, so that can happen. Right?
Then you can do it for 60 days. I know I had a couple of little detail things I wanted to ask you. One was, did men and women do the same work in the packing houses?
No, not really. At one time, men used to be packers. Brian Cooney, who was a business agent, had been a packer.
Earl Preston used to be, remember?
Yes.
And he used to, when he packed, he stood the other way and we'd get such a bang out of him.
Because he was left-handed.
The girls,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The way he packed.
No, as a rule, men didn't do packing, they didn't do sorting. The only male sorter that I knew of was Clarence LeBounty.
And there was a Mr. Breen with a bad leg.
Yeah. Clarence LeBounty had a wooden leg and he wanted to work in the packing house and he couldn't be a packer and so they let him be a sorter. As a rule, women didn't do, at one time they used to hand make the boxes. Women didn't do that. Men did that. Women were usually sorters, packers, stampers, checkers, and Lydia was the...
Yeah, I used to make up in the wintertime, I'd make up the shook, work with the shook, you know, make it all up. Label it, the little apple box, the wooden.
Oh, yeah.
When they packed in the wood.
Yeah.
I had to label those all and restack them so they'd be all ready to for them to put in the machine to nail. I was in the wintertime doing that.
Because of...
George put me on piecework, you know.
Because of seniority. But as a rule, women didn't work in cold storage.
No.
They didn't do any trucking, they didn't do a lot of things. We had a woman fruit inspector, but usually that was a man's role.
Did women ever try and get into the jobs that men did?
I don't think we were, not when we worked.
No.
Now I see that that Evans girl, she's out. She's been doing that for a couple of years. You know, she takes the bins, she drives one of those little thing bobs. She stacks the bins, you know, outside and brings the apples in and that. She gets men's wages.
I don't think that women ever aspired to working in the cold storage.
Yeah.
You know, it was very unpleasant. We didn't try for those kind of jobs.
Did men make hourly wages and women piecework, or was it all piece?
It was piecework for the packers.
Sorters and the cold storage guys all on hourly.
Yeah.
How much did you make if you were doing piecework? Was that above your minimum wage, or was that...
Well, we had, yes, you know, if we didn't make our minimum wage for a couple of days in a row, the foreman would come around and be very accusing. You know, what you were expected to do on piecework was to make above the minimum wage. Now, I always felt very strongly that if the packer, and I was a packer, but I'd also been a sorter, but I felt very strongly if the packers did well, it meant that the sorters had worked very hard, you know, to get the apples across so the packers would have a lot of apples. If the packers did well, the other end of the line, which was the stampers and the checkers and the box machine and the gluers, would all have to work very hard. And I felt it was very unfair. The Packers were the pushers.
Uh-huh.
You know, Eddie,
floor.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And because I felt very strongly, and I enjoyed packing, I was not a fast packer, but I was a conscientious packer, because I felt very strongly that it was unfair for the middle group to be pushing either the top group or the other group, you know, that it wasn't fair that we should have peace workers in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So one year in negotiations, I had the brilliant idea that the sorters should get 3 cents an hour extra, you know, over and above the minimum wage, just for sorting. That was a great idea, except that when the packing houses finally agreed to it, it turned out to be an absolute disaster, because if a packer was sent up to the sorting table, she still got the minimum wage. She didn't get the extra 3 cents. You know, you had to be labeled as sorter.
In the right job category.
Yes, yeah. It was dumb.
Huh.
But now there's less and less piecework in the packing house.
Yeah, now in the big co-op now, they haven't got piecework.
Did you ever try to get rid of piecework altogether, or did people...
Oh, we talked about it.
Yeah.
But it never went through a convention. It was never accepted because the packers always... Because actually the packers could make very good money.
I bet.
Yes. And there were... piecework brings out the very worst in people.
Mm.
Yes. Okay. You know, and it brings out tremendous greed. Now, I have a woman that I like quite well, but if her own grandmother was in the lineup with her as a packer, she would have ruthlessly destroyed Grandma, you know, in order to get that extra box of apples packed.
What an image.
No, but she was like that.
How
she,
much did you get for an extra box?
Pardon?
How much did you get for a box?
At that time, we were getting 9 cents a box.
And how many box? How long did it take to do a box?
Well, not that long, but we had to pack, 11 boxes an hour in order to make our minimum.
Extra fancy, and you were in the C grade, well, then you had nothing to do, right? You had to go now help somebody else that was running
They had a very complicated system. I often think, you know, before I die, I should write the story of my life and tell my daughters what life was all about. They had a very complicated system in the packing house. As to, there were always 3 packers to a section. There was extra fancy, fancy, and C grade. You know, so there were 3 sections going around the grader. And then there were usually 2 packers to a section, you know, packing by size. If you had too many apples, you called in the packer behind you, and if she didn't have enough work, and she would come and help you, and you would tell her where she could pack. If you still had too much fruit, you could call the packer behind her, and then you could call the packer behind her, and then you call the packer ahead of you, and then the next packer ahead of you, and then you go around the other side of the grader. Now, what this ruthless packer would do, in order to make sure that she always had lots of fruit, at the very last minute, she would call the packer behind her to come and help, you know, because she was moving into the next section. You would get packed out, you know, and she would go into it. She would call the packer behind, the packer behind, the packer behind. Then she would call the packer ahead. So when she would get into the next section, she would go into a full section. She would pack madly, you know. Well, anyway.
People must have hated her.
Pardon?
I imagine.
Oh, there was a few fruit hogs.
Fruit
yeah,
hogs.
They called them fruit hogs, yes.
what about seasons? Like, did women work year-round eventually, or did you just work seasonal?
When I started the Oliver Co-op, and I think I started in 52, at that time, the longest season we had for the first few years, we worked as long as Armistice Day. That was a long season. Yeah. But now they work pretty
now
well.
Now they just about a whole year.
Yeah. They work the year round.
If they get a week off, they're lucky. Yeah. Because of the cold CA storage. You see, they put them in there, and then you can, they'll pack delicious in cherry time.
Right. Okay. So, and did the guys work year round? Like, was there maintenance work or work that men did that was year round, or was it everyone was seasonal?
Oh, they kept the few of them that had seniority in the cold storage, they kept them on, you know, in case they had to orders for shipping, and they'd have to have some guys. But now I think they have more. You know, years ago they kept a few of them on.
Right.
Like their mechanics and the foreman and all them, and then a few in the cold storage they kept on. And the other ones were laid off, and if they needed them, you know, they called them in. Well, we have so many cars to pack, or so, you know.
Was it shift work, Lydia? Did you guys work shifts?
No, not, well, when the cherries were bad, and, you know, with all the rain and everything, heck, they took, I remember my daughter was about 15 years old, you know, and she went to work at night, the night shift. Her and I worked the night shift then. And that was generally, you know, but now, in the apples in the last couple of years here in the co-op, they work night shift just about every night. And I understand now, with them all coming into this one packing house, I was told that it's going to be 24 hours a day.
Hmm. Really three centralized, shift. High technology.
Yeah, three shifts they're going to put on. That means then they can use some from the Haynes, and some from Karamias, the ones that want to work.
Huh. You were working during the war. Was there a change in the labor force during the war? Like, did more women come in then when guys went overseas?
Well, that applied to everything.
Yeah.
More women come in from...
For taking jobs that had, I guess, traditionally been done by men. Like, I know in some industries, like yours,
there. Oh, yes.
You know.
Now, when I came back from the war, there was women still working in different plants. This is in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And there was women still working in plants.
But those years, as I say, they still, I don't know where they found men somewhere, because the women weren't doing men's jobs.
Here, eh?
No, they weren't, not in the packing house,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
talking
yeah.
about. No, they still had the men doing the men's, you know. But now in the last, as I say, now in the last few years, the women are, if they can handle a job, a man's job, can do it, they get man's wages and they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to them.
I am sorry I didn't make supper for
No.
Well, I've got a phone.